Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Brandon Pham here. And before we start today's episode, I want to proudly announce that this episode is sponsored by Autodesk. For longtime listeners and supporters out there, you know that I am an avid Autodesk user. I've started my career using 3ds Max, switched over to Maya, interchangeably. I've been going back and forth throughout my professional career at different studios. The same was even true before I even entered the industry as a student and played around with 3ds Max to complete my schoolwork. So in terms of history relationship with Autodesk, it's been rapid since over 15 years ago, and it doesn't seem to be changing the next 15 years. So if you're serious about your game development career in the game industry, heavily start investing into Autodesk and its tools, because it's very much still a part of the pipeline in any game studio. And of course, Autodesk offers a great suite of tools besides Max and Maya. We've had guests on here before who are weapon and vehicle artists, who are huge fans of using Fusion, architects using AutoCAD. It's a huge amount of tools if you're serious about 3D software and utilizing it to be the best artist that you can be. And on to today's episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me a special guest for longtime listeners. Don't be confused. This is not a roundtable news episode. It's an actual topic that we have at hand. What? Ray Graham. What's up, Ray? How you doing, man?
What's happening, man? How you doing?
All right. Just to kind of make it separate in case people are coming upon this by itself, can you give a short intro of who you are, where you're from, and where you're heading?
What?
Yeah.
I haven't done this in a while. I'm Ray Graham. I'm an engineer. I've been in the video game industry for about 22 years. My background is in graphics engineering. I'm currently a technical director over at Unity Software right now. And I've been making a lot of video games over the years. I'm originally from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, but I'm over here living in the Bay Area these days.
Awesome, man. So, of course, we've been longtime friends for a while. You've been in leadership positions for a long time. So I thought when talking about this particular topic, is like, who's more perfect than Ray Graham himself to come on and talk about, to some, a very sensitive issue, to others is Lena, of course. I think if you haven't read the title, it's about diversity, right? And the reason why I think it is a perfect time to kind of talk about this is it is coming into a new age of game development, which is remote working. And we talked about that in the past year, how remote working is kind of opening up a lot of borders. And I think healthily giving a lot more representation in especially Western studios, where location was a factor in whether or not to hire a certain group of people or certain types of people, right? And I feel like that has kind of increased in terms of the different diversity and different culture being introduced into a workplace. That's my general thought. Like, what have you seen the last couple of years in your own experience and kind of around the area or through friends?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I've seen it change that much, honestly. I think I see a little bit of progress now that COVID and we're hiring folks More than just in the Bay Area or in like specific locations. So we're kind of opening it more to other states in the US that are a little bit more, that may be a little bit more diverse, or at least you have a little bit more of a larger pool of different types of folks, right? So like, you know, hiring, you know, we're hiring people like in Florida and in Georgia and in Texas and getting a little bit more a mix of what you would usually find if you were just to hire folks, like say in the San Francisco Bay Area. Right. But like in terms of overall changing in the numbers or any sort of increase or positive change, I don't necessarily think I'm seeing that per se. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, what would you say is the biggest factor that's preventing that? Is it just too, it's just a natural slow effect? Or do you think there's something more with biases within the workplace still?
I wouldn't say bias, but nobody cares.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Like I say video game companies just don't care. And they just want to hire folks and be done with it and keep pushing. And then the ones that are like, oh yeah, we do care, right? They're doing it in a performative way. And then they're not netting any results and they don't track the results and then they don't hold themselves accountable to their results. And then nothing changes.
Huh. Yeah. Like something that I joke about the last couple of years is kind of like the same. Yeah. It's like, it's very marketable right now to say that you're pushing for diversity within the workplace. Right. Mm-hmm. And once those headlines are out, like you said, no one really follows up on that. Studio is like, all right, well, how exactly, you know, it's been 2 years later. Let's take a look around the studio. We never really get that follow-up article on these certain studios that announces it right from the beginning. And you're saying like, yeah, no one really does that. It's just all for face value, right?
Yeah. But like also I think you're also kind of insinuating that there's a whole lot of studios coming out and saying this. And there isn't though, right?
Like for game studios?
Game studios there's only a handful. Like,
there is a handful and they all seem to be in San Francisco for sure. Yeah, that's right. There is like this, like, yeah, you're right. There's a false pretense that somehow everything seems to be better. The only reason why I think there is a natural evolution to this. You know, the things that you're doing at Gamehead, the things that I'm seeing at Game School Online, there seems to be groups of people where game development and education hasn't really been available to that group and now is because of online or just community just putting more awareness into it. So I think, again, it might be 5-10 years where that group of graduates is going to the workplace. But my question is at a leadership position, do you see resistance and biases still that's keeping these students from getting there?
Actually, no. Like I think especially now, at least in my experience, I've not seen any like real biases, right? I see a whole lot of folks want to learn more, want to know what's out there. There is a lot of focus on you know, the youth and the work that I do at Gamehead and getting them internships and trying to grow the pipeline, right? But there are also folks in the pipeline. There are folks already in the pipeline. You just have to know how to reach out to them and how to approach them, right? And so I think there's like a two-pronged approach, right? Yes, build up more youth, get more youth interested, apprenticeship programs, mentorship programs, internships, like do that work for sure, right? And actually do that work. Put your money where your mouth is and fund those kind of programs and really put the effort in. And then the other part of it is like actually find the folks that are already out here. You know what I mean? Like if I snap my fingers, I could get a whole dev team of diverse folks together. Right. So there's really no excuse that game companies can't find somebody or anything like that. Like, you know, like they're out there. You just have to know where to go. Right.
Yeah. There was a funny story. Coincidentally, today I was talking to like a former colleague and she was kind of recounting this story, how just being a woman in the industry that she faced very casual and subtle biases where an idea is presented and then gets rejected. And then 5 minutes later, a male artist would suggest the same thing. And suddenly it's a good idea. And it was funny because I've heard that story from another friend a few years ago saying the exact same thing as she was a designer. And then a same idea was suggested 5 minutes later and that was accepted. And it was not out of callousness or maliciousness, but it's one of those things where there is like a certain prejudice when there is a physical trait involved, right? I mean, it's just one of those things when it is not on purpose, but those little things do sneak in. When I talked to Larry, you know, he was facing that as a designer too. And, you know, being a black designer is very unique, in this industry, right?
Why you say it like that though?
Well, it's true. It is one of those things. It's
like a bias. Black designers actually, but yes.
But like in terms of ratio, right?
Yeah.
There is a minority, part of that. And it is an industry still, like you said, it isn't like a very abrasively halting type of industry where it's like no to certain types, right? But it's like those little biases that I do find a lot because we are, you know, the best recommendations are the ones that usually gets hired. And if you tend to hang out with people that looks like you, who thinks like you, it's very familiar to kind of go into workplace that are the same types of people, right?
Yeah.
Designers, especially probably engineers, kind of the same kind of experience. It's just very similar types, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the underbelly. And you're saying that is still kind of the same thing that's still happening, right? Like, or is it getting better a little where you feel like it's getting better mixed up right now?
No, I don't think so. I don't necessarily think it's that much. Like maybe there's, I think there's more folks in the industry in general, right? There's more, more diverse, like the numbers are seem to be increasing, but I think the numbers on the non-diverse folks is also increasing. I think the industry is just growing, right? Because the percentages kind of stay
the same.
And like in terms of we hear all the stories from our women, from our female or women colleagues that there are issues with their ideas getting discounted or like how they have to stand up for themselves more or there's all sorts of like interactions that are kind of like our preconceived notions of how the gender constructs work and all that, like that of course is always going to be, that's always something that's at play. And in terms of like, you know, for me, like, I don't know if I've told my stories on your podcast before about like some like super overt things that I've noticed, but, right. But nothing, but like the day-to-day stuff, I don't know if I've ever really noticed they're paying much mind. And I just have kept pushing, right? And just do my job, do it well, and then maybe one day somebody will recognize it, right? And it's kind of worked out. That's kind of worked out for me.
Yeah.
And I really haven't really, like, I am mindful of how I act at work.
Yeah.
I am mindful of what I say at work and all those things. Make sure that people are not careful. afraid or scared.
Right?
But
do people get intimidated? Because you are a big guy, right? You're like, I always forget how tall you are. Whenever I do see you in person. Yeah. You're like over 6'2", 6'3", right?
Yeah, but well, 6'2".
Does that play a factor into your authoritative suggestions?
I think it's kind of a mix, right? Where I'm a 6'2" man in general. Yeah. So that kind of works in my favor. But then I'm also 6'2" black man at the same time. So then I gotta
times two that.
I gotta balance that. Right. You know what I mean? Right. So it's one of those things where it's hard to say.
Is there a thing where you're just talking normal and people just perceive it as more aggressive than like your regular tone? Like for women, there is like this misconceived notion that if they have an opinion, it's like, oh, she's super bossy, right? When she's just saying what other people, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like women do tend to, like my colleagues do kind of complain about how that just a regular suggestion can come off as bossy when it's just her saying it as a male would. Is there an aggressive like bias with you where people just say, well, why are you saying it in that way when you're just saying something, right?
Well, yeah, well, like that's you know, and Larry talked about this before too. Mm-hmm. Like you actually try to speak calmly and really
very controlled, yeah.
It really make sure that emotion is nowhere in what you're saying, you know what I mean? You know, of course, that hasn't always worked out for you. Like in the past, I've definitely lost my cool with the other folks. But it's definitely over the years is something I try really hard to keep calm and not really enter any emotion into it. You know what I mean?
That's crazy, man.
And sometimes that goes against it too, because then people are like, I want to know if something's super important or serious, and you just seem calm all the time, and it's like, well, I'm not trying to tell you it was a complete disaster and get all worked up, and then you say, "Hey, bro, calm down. What are you
doing?" It's like, "Hey, Ray, why are we missing these milestones?" It's like, "Well, Steve, I told you that if we do too much, that we're gonna go over the schedule." It's like, "Why are you so chill about it? We're gonna miss this deadline?" It's like, "I told you 5 weeks ago this might happen." Now I do remember that Larry was like. Just remembering Larry when I talked to him, like he always had, because I've seen both sides, right? They're super calm and polite, and you know, just him being himself. So I was like, oh, this is all Larry. But then when he it wasn't until he illustrated that he had a specific tone at work where I was like, you're right, you do speak a certain way at work versus how we hang out. Where it was kind of shocking to me to not realize that, being his friend for so long, right? So. And of course, for me, I don't do any of that. I'm just ridiculous at all stages, right? Just impolite and over a line stepper all the time, right? So there is a comfort that I kind of take advantage of just being in my skin. That I don't really think beyond that until I talk to you guys and realize the different experiences that has to happen. And it's kind of bizarre. And it's those little biases that I do realize that add up, and it gets tiring to keep up. And thankfully you were able to kind of push past that and do what you need to do to get to where you are. But you're saying your counterpart, you know, being a female, there is extra obstacles that are somewhat hard to kind of get past to a leadership role, right?
I think there's obstacles for everybody, you know what I mean? And then some folks have a little bit easier time at it, right? And then others do not. And a lot of it is there's a lot that goes into it, right? There's a whole lot of the leadership roles and things like that. It's people, I like that dude. I think that dude could be a great leader. You know what I mean? That's really what it takes a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
And if that's really what it takes a lot of the times, then a lot of people are getting cut out of that.
Yeah. For sure.
If you're not assertive, if you're not strong, right? And then if you're a woman and you are assertive and you're strong, then it's kind of like, what's wrong with her, right? And so so there's all this like double-edged sword and lines you have to really balance to really kind of break through into that realm, you know. And it's I think it's hard, and I think there's a lot of biases and preconceived notions that are at play there, like unconsciously too, right? Like a lot of it's not even conscious stuff, like just you know there's teams that are like, hey, like I'm struggling to hire women and diverse folks, and how can I do it? Where can I go? How do I make it happen, right? And then me, I'm like, man, I don't know. Most of my team is diverse and women. Like, you know, the way that is because
you hang with those people.
I hang with those people. I know them, and they come to me also because why? Because I am a diverse
familiar. Yeah.
In my own right. Right.
Yeah.
So like I can attract those people just because I am not the same standard thing, right? And also my network is more diverse, right? So if I need, I still hire people that I know, but I just know more diverse people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the heart of it. Important thing, right? And if you don't have those things, then you have actually have to actively work at those things instead of focusing on, oh, how quickly can I get this headcount closed?
Yeah.
You have to focus on, okay, well, let me actually target the right people.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think a lot of the confusion when it comes to this, on the other side of the fence, right? Obviously, I'm not on that side. But like these forced hires, these forced initiatives, you know, what was it? That program in the United States that really kind of hurt on all sides, the affirmative action stuff, right? We have data from that the way that was handled was a failed experiment because the people that got those positions felt like they were being judged not by their skill, but because, you know, it was given to them. And the people, their colleagues, just felt like it was given to them, kind of cheating out from the more more confirmed, more.
I could talk all day about this, quite frankly, and I will not.
I know. I agree with you, right? Because within the game industry, there is something about, just go back to grade school, right? You sit at the lunch table with people that you know, that you're familiar with, that is like you, right? And if there is only a small group at every school or every studio in this case, that group will always remain small. All right. And like you said, it won't be attractive. It won't be magnetizing to that similar group. And so there is a fundamental flaw with a lot of how our studios are set up. And currently, yes, we are at a percentage that have remained the same. Right. The industry is growing. There are more studios, but the percentage is the same. And without a huge change or influx, that percentage will never really fluctuate. Right. Is what you're saying. Even with media, and we're kind of seeing it with our cousin entertainment. Let me finish my thought real quick. Like the entertainment industry with the movies, they're really doing like Disney, for example, a huge diversity push, right? And for the first time as a Asian, seeing this many Asian actors, right? This hasn't happened since Bruce Lee, right? This is a huge wow. I was like, my son can actually talk to me and say, I want to be an actor. I won't be just laughing in his face anymore. I was like, oh yeah, that could be the time because there's a good shot at this point for the jobs that are available. And that required a huge awareness. And I don't think people are saying that those Asian actors are cheating out of any other race actors. It's like, it's just more opportunities and more of the content is tailored towards Asian American. So it makes sense. And I think they just made pretty big strides versus the game industry the last few years. And is it the reasons I listed? What do you think? What's the main factor that made the movie industry just so much quicker to adopt these things? And not to say without any resistance, there's still a lot of like, you know, the whole Star Wars hate thing.
I'm about to say this. First, I'm surprised you didn't start off this episode shouting out AAPI History Month, like big up Asian American Pacific Islander History Month. You know, you got to big up your peoples and your brothers and sisters. And this is the month that we're celebrating that. Big up to all of
this is our month. Yeah.
claim it, bro.
Yeah.
And then the other part is movie industry still racist, bro.
Oh yeah, of course.
And you're seeing more Asian stuff when you need an Asian person these days. Now they actually are going into their well of like five Asian actors.
Yeah.
And pulling them out. Like every Asian movie has to have Awkwafina in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Killing and so it. Like, you can't hate. Right? Like, she's good at it.
But I mean, like, I mean, is she the only choice, really?
What's that saying? The ocean raises all boats. So yeah, she's maybe, the ocean yeah. right now.
Maybe she's opening the door for other folks to come in. Yeah,
sure. There you go. Yeah.
But yeah, you know what I mean. Like so the pool is still super small, and starved for things that when we get a little bit of something. We're happy about it. See, they have a Black Panther, right? Like we got the Black Panther stuff for like, oh my God, finally.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more work to do there. Right. And a lot more, and people are doing the work and it's happening. Right. But I wouldn't necessarily just say, oh man, the movie industry seems to have gotten it. And what's up with video games? We aren't there yet, bro. We ain't there
yet. But I would say in terms of progress, the last few years, there seems to be such a attentiveness and intention on that side to kind of do what they can do in influx. I think a lot of it too has been access, right? And I will say this about the game industry, it's becoming so much easier to have an idea and put a game out nowadays. And I think that is the ultimate answer for diversity and welcoming game developers and basically removing gates and barriers and biases, right?
Where we see the most diversity in the game industry is definitely there, like in the indie space, right?
Indie space.
Small indie teams, they're you know, non-traditional methods of getting into game development, better access to tooling, better access to information, and then they're able to make something special because they are coming at it from a different vantage point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or somebody's from the industry and then they leave and then they hire diverse folks because them themselves are diverse, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of different, I'm seeing a lot more progress, at least in the indie space than let's say in AAA, right? Where AAA is about, we need to get this thing done. We need to hire 100 people, you know, and let's just hire them from the other studio down the road or wherever else.
Right. You know. So let's go to that, right? So the indie space right now, they're whoever, my friends, let's make a game. The AAA space, the barrier before has been the location and going to these interviews and looking a certain way and then being judged and either pass or fail, right? But because they're, you know, what we'll talk about in the roundtable, they'll have the GDC survey kind of showed like last year that was really interesting. But one of the biggest thing was an increase of personnel within the studio, right? All games pretty much got delayed or pushed back because of COVID. But we're also seeing, you know, a desperateness of basically of those situations of hiring pretty much anything that anyone that fits the bill, right? You know, these Zoom hires are not as demanding. They're not as intensive. And it's more about qualifications, less than how do I feel about you or how do I feel about working next to you, right?
Yeah. I don't know if that benefits.
I think it does.
Diverse candidates. Like, I'm not sure, honestly. Like,
I guess it is one of those things that it's, like if we get like a non-minority on this panel, it's very hard for them to like, yeah, you're right. I think I do have biases, right? I mean, and if I ask you on use Zoom hires, and like you said, I'm just doing what I've been doing. It's just I'm inviting the best candidates that happen to be a minority or not, right? I'm just hiring the best candidate. So it's very hard to kind of pinpoint like, well, is the Zoom hire actually a benefit to, I know by location it is.
Yeah.
And I by default that helps, right?
Yeah. I think that's the only thing. It's like the location, right? If you're going to hire somebody remotely, the chances that you could get a more diverse hire by hiring remotely is increased, right? Yeah. If you look in the right places, like, I don't know if like, seeing somebody in person is you get a much more empathetic connection if somebody sure. is there in person. So over Zoom, it's easy to be like, oh, it's a black dude. Turn off the camera. And the interview right now is a black dude.
Right? Is that real though? Like, I feel like in person. So in person, you feel like it removes more biases because you're spending longer with the person. And
I think human beings have more empathetic connections when they're
seeing someone. Maybe that's right. True. So you think the internet is actually making it work? That's an interesting thought, man.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
like I have no biases. So it's very hard to get my mind inside that head of of how to recklessly hire, right?
And also, I don't even think like right now everybody's like, oh yeah, we're going to start looking into remote work, right? But I don't think, like we talked about this before, I don't think the AAA companies are...
No, like, they I'm here in the office.
Back to the office. They can't wait to get back to the office.
I think your initial discussion at the beginning, and at some point I'll replay your prophetic, you know, all our prophetic like hypothesis during the COVID and seeing it's happening. Yeah, mostly all my friends from AAA companies are basically going back in September, reversing all their stance about like all those talks about Fridays and maybe Thursday or 2 day a week in the workplace is being completely squashed now. Like it's not even a question, and it's like special cases only now. So that's becoming the reality because I would say as a large experiment, the game industry, at least in the AAA sector, prefer being in the office. There was only a small quantity that were actually efficient at home. And that's the sad reality that I'm accepting. I thought everybody at home would be awesome because it removes all the politics in the office. But it just really exposed a lot of people who are self-sufficient and those who are not. And a majority are not self-sufficient, unfortunately.
But there's also people that are... I don't understand it, but there's people that are way more extroverted and want that social connection
with they feed off of other people's energy. Yeah.
And
I think they call it emptiness inside. it's a little sidetrack, but I see the pandemic as people like basically sitting in a room and staring at themselves, and the people who liked themselves were having a tough time, but still writing it okay and mostly want to stay at home and continue that way. And people who couldn't stand just sitting static, just really didn't like what they were seeing and needed distractions. That's my theory.
Some people just like people. Turns out. Yeah. Some people just like people.
This is enough. Some people don't. I have you on my TV over there. That's all I need, dude. That's all I need, bro. I can tell if you're hireable just from this. But it's a very interesting thing that you're bringing up that's actually giving me a second thought, that the internet, because of the distancing, is actually giving people more of a pass on potential candidates because they're missing that connection that only is available through physical presence.
Yeah. If you seriously want to talk about like, you know, hiring more people from diverse backgrounds and stuff like that, you know, it's really about processes that you put in place at your job in order to enable that. Right. And where are you targeting people? Are you looking at your job descriptions and doing a pass on them so that it doesn't automatically like, and this is not about dumbing down qualifications or anything like that. It's more about, you know, using the right kind of language. Right. So if you say stuff like, oh, I'm looking for a rock star, I'm looking for a code ninja, or, you know, like words like that, it immediately turns a lot of people away or turns a lot of people off. Right.
There is something about a younger person coming in and seeing either someone that's similar in a leadership position, because it kind of makes them feel more comfortable about, right. Oh, that is possible.
That is possible. And also a lot of people are like, this would be the first time ever I've ever had a black boss or a woman boss. Or
do you hear that a lot? Did they say this out loud?
I've heard that a few times. Yeah, heard that a few times.
How does that make you feel? Does that make you feel proud? Or is like, why are you so caught up in that? Like, why is that such a thing to you? It's like,
I understand it.
You get it? Yeah.
And I was like, damn, I wish I could say that. Right.
You're the first. Right? That's what every first says. I wish you had that.
I wish I had that. But like, but at the same time, it's a lot of pressure too, right? Is that you're
a role model.
You got to live up to that, right? And make sure that you're doing a good job. So, I understand totally where that comes from.
So this being a slow term, like is like you said, like I do agree with you. There doesn't seem to be such a huge percentage shift, right? It's more people. Mm-hmm. There's more of us around in these studios, right? But yeah, it's not like huge. So what is the fix, right? Because right now there is like this other side of the coin where it's basically racism against whites, right? In a way where like male whites, we can't look at you as a candidate. Hey, some people say that, right? But that's,
well that's,
you know what I mean? It's like, illegal, we can't, right? It is illegal, but it's like we're specifically looking at diversifying, right? So when people hear that, we're specifically not looking at white males anymore.
Here's the thing, right? I have heard people say this, right?
Right.
And it's straight up illegal. You shouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, you shouldn't.
I kind of look at what the and there's little evidence that this works, but I still think it's a good idea, right? The NFL has the Rooney rule, which is basically when they hire a head coach, the teams have to
balance it. Yeah.
One black head coach.
Right? I see.
And of course, a lot of teams, you know, you could imagine a lot of teams just like, all right, fine, we'll just get a guy in, be not interested in him at all.
Yeah.
And then say we interviewed one and then hired a white guy. Right. Like teams definitely could do that. It has not yielded a huge increase in black head coaches in the NFL. There's been a few more, but it's still a very small number.
Yeah.
Something like that at for game industry or tech jobs or whatever, could be something that makes sense, right? Where you're like, hey, let's target specifically women, other background folks, black, Asian, LGBT, whatever. Right. Let's target that. Make sure we have a diverse panel of candidates. And if somebody comes in there that is qualified, has the abilities and has the skills, we hire them.
Yeah.
Right. I also think that though teams also should make room for what if you do get diverse folks in and they're not as good as some white guy or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. Hire the white guy because you want somebody who's skilled and qualified in that role, right?
Yeah.
You should also have space for the folks like, I think I see potential in this person.
All right.
And I think I can grow this person to be where they need to be, right?
Right.
And then leave the space and leave the time for that as well, right? And do it that way. If you can't find the super skilled candidate that you need, right? Like maybe hire, you know, and some companies are like, we don't have the time for that, or we don't have the money to invest
right
in that.
That's what
if you're serious about this,
yeah,
then you do. You make time and you get the money to do that if you're serious. If you're not, well then you don't do that. Right.
Does the end kind of justify the means in this type of situation where, you know, as a business owner or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they would basically go for the option that you just said, right? What's cheaper and faster? I just need to fill. I don't have the luxury of time on my side to kind of look for this very specific initiative, right?
It's almost as if, you know, there's a job in industry called like, I don't know, like there's a job in industry where people's job is to find people to hire. Like they go out and they try to find the right person for the roles. And so like, and their whole job is just finding people.
Yeah.
And like, if you give them instructions, they go out and they find people.
What are you saying?
What is that role called again? I don't understand what that role's called. Right. So like, it's not like, you know, like,
are you
like, come on, man. Right. So if you put the effort in, right. And say, this is something we're going to do and build up the right networks. It's not a problem, or it shouldn't be that much of a problem.
Do you think it's the general, because I feel like the people who resist the idea the most are the people who just hate being told what he or she cannot or can do type of thing. It's right. Like, you can't tell me because this is my thing, right? Why are you telling me what to do with my thing?
You do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the attitude mostly. And it's not really because they're against the cause. It's just the the idea, it's a very American attitude, to be honest, of like, stop telling me what I could or cannot do or can or cannot do.
At the end of the day, is this, right? Yeah. If you want to hire me,
yeah,
and I ask you about diversity, you're like, nah, I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you ain't hiring me. Right? You know what I mean? Right? So, like, you know, it's your decision, right? But then, like, there's, you just have to be willing to accept the cost of that decision.
Right? Yeah, I mean, and this is getting personal, right? It doesn't have to be present. It could be past. Have you ever felt that kind of attitude towards you for feeling imposter? You're not, obviously, you're super confident and competent, right? But do you ever get that weirdness from coworkers that you beat someone out of a job, that they treat you differently because of that? Because you've been in leadership position pretty much everywhere, right? So
yeah, well, if I did, I didn't notice it, honestly. Okay. If it did happen, I didn't notice it. But I do, you know, like, of course I do feel, there are times where you're like, man, why am I here? Am I good enough for this? I don't know.
Well, that's everyone.
At least for me, it's when I'm like debugging something I can't figure it out. I'm like, really, why did I choose
imposter syndrome? Yeah, it's real.
Right. Like, that stuff is real for sure. But yeah, like, but when it comes to like how other people feel, like, I don't really pay too much attention. Like, I look to the people that do have my back and are. I've had some pretty good people that have been
supportive,
supportive and really helped me along the way for sure.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm really appreciative of those folks more so than, you know, I can't think about the haters, bro. I don't know.
Well, I mean, what's unique about you is you work both in the game industry and tech at Apple before, right? So
yeah.
Are you saying the ratio is the same or even at those tech jobs? Is it worse, like the percentage wise, terms of?
I think the percentage is low, period, across tech. Still, and in video games, it's worse. And then if you think about
games, is worse than tech right now.
Yeah, because it's just way, way smaller industry, way more niche, way more special knowledge that you have to know, right? And then when you start going into the realm of like engineering. In the video game industry, like
super niche,
it gets really, really tiny at that point. It's already small in tech, but then it's really bad in the video game industry, right?
What was tech doing differently that's better than games in terms of just percentage, right? Like so the diverse crowd tends to lean towards tech more than games.
Well, of course, right? Because like then you're going to get into the whole, like, we're going to get into the whole subject of like the wealth gap, right? Yeah. And a good way of closing that wealth gap is to give people more opportunities for higher paying jobs, right?
Yeah.
And so now, even if you're a Black youth that always wanted to make video games their whole life, and then it comes time to feed your family and somebody's like, well, okay, here, you're going to get paid this and you work 7 days a week for 13 hours every day. Mm-hmm. Or you're gonna get paid double that and work 9 to 5, work 9 to 5, 5 days a week, right? Like,
and we'll pick you up
and we'll give you really nice food and like, and we'll give you bonuses and stock options. Like, I mean, the choice becomes obvious if you're not really about that video game life. Like, if you're not really about, like, if you're really about, I'm doing this to better my life and to feed my family,
right?
The choice is obvious,
right?
You know what I mean? The people that are in video games are in video games because they love it. Like, they love it, right? And they're willing to sacrifice for it.
So, yeah. So I'm hearing that you don't care about your wife and family and putting more food on the table, and you took a selfish decision.
I've clearly made a lot of bad decisions. Trust me on that, right? I stayed in the industry and made a lot of bad decisions. Like, took pay cuts because I want to make a great game, right?
So is it the challenging? Because I hear this a lot from engineers, especially, right? Where you guys have opportunities all over the world especially in the Bay Area at these awesome companies. And you've been there and you came back to games, right? Is it that compelling? Well, obviously, you're saying it is, but like, is this really? Because you've been through it all. You know how games are. We've been on this podcast. We do these roundtables. It's ridiculousness. It's like unfair all the time, right?
Like, you know, I come on. We come on here a lot, and we talk a lot of trash about video games, and a lot of trash about hiring, a lot of trash about crunch and overtime and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else, quite frankly.
That's crazy.
I think I found the right spot where it's a good mix of the two, where it's not completely in, but it's also not completely out. And I still really care about the industry a lot.
Right.
You know what I mean? And also I think that's also why we criticize the industry too, because we care about it. We want to see it mature into something that is like
make a change, like make it better,
good for employees and good for families and all that kind of stuff, right? So yeah, that's how I see it. I was at Apple doing some stuff and I just missed it, man. I just missed making video games.
Yeah, it's just so simple. Well, I would say, like, you being in the position you are back in video games and having such a wealth of experience and tech and games, I think a lot of young students and young listeners are inspired by that, and I mean that alone is a huge influence, right? Especially with what you're doing at Gamehead, like them seeing you at such a high position over at Unity and everything. I think that, you know, it's one of those 10-15 year things before we see it in fruition of actually happening. And I think that's the biggest thing that people just who are on the other side of the fence, they don't realize the long-term goals of this push, right? They just see these immediate, they just have this immediate reaction. It's like, oh, he's taking a job from my white guy friend over there, right? It's like, it's not about that. It's not about taking jobs. It's just a fair shot, right? It's more about just fairness and judgment at the beginning.
Yeah. Right? And I'm seeing, like, especially with the latest, you know, the latest events of the last year or two.
Yeah.
Like the things that happened like last year, so it was the last March, right? Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of companies, like there's been a kind of an awakening, right? And then a lot of companies are kind of had their head in the sand, have kind of come up and are like, okay, I'm willing to invest some money into this and do something actually meaningful.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, like, you know, Black developer funds and companies hiring apprenticeships or internships and specifically targeting underrepresented community programs, and so they can find the right pool of people instead of going to all the same tired places that they usually go.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some uptick with this, like in the last, you know, like the last year, right? Mm. And so it will take a long time. And especially because of COVID, even though we do game heads, we've been able to reach more students because we're doing it all online.
Right.
We're actually reaching more, right? So maybe that will have some all of this stuff, as bad as it was, have some positive effects. But you know, yeah, we won't see that anytime soon, maybe in the next few years.
Right. Well, the initiatives because of COVID, is it because people were at home or all these funds and stuff? What exactly is it about last year that people are just
Black
creating?
Black Lives Matter. You know, and then a lot of white folks got real guilty all of a sudden. They were like, oh, wait, Black people getting killed? Really? I never knew this.
Well, we're kind of going through our eighth thing right now.
It's been happening for like 20 years. Like, I didn't know this was happening.
People are attacking our old people and women right now. I'm sorry. We're at the beginning of that, of seeing funding for Asian Americans. Yeah. It's pretty crazy, man.
And like, so folks are finally being awoken to that now, it seems. And so there's a lot of effort. There's a lot of companies that are putting some efforts behind that.
Yeah, it's been a crazy year, man. And we're, like, it's kind of bizarre to kind of see my peeps be beaten down. Such cowardice. And I think a lot of the attacks are just conveniently attacking Asians because of the frustrations, you know, this past year, and just mentally unstable people. Like, regular people aren't attacking people. It's just mentally frustrated, mentally, you know, disturbed people are doing this, but it's enough to kind of like, hey, hold on, man, this is becoming an issue, right? This is an issue.
And it's always some old Asian folks that they're fighting. They're not fighting like young. Or at least I haven't seen some young folks getting fought.
No, it's like, always old like, people, why women. So, it's easy targets, you, basically. Yeah, well, yeah, like yeah. If you want to go and hurt someone right now, Asian people are like prime
I would see somebody try something with you wearing your little Ryu vest.
I'm waiting for it. I even joked with my friend that we should like dress up like in makeup and stuff and walk around like we're having trouble just to incite. I think historically, I've said this before, man, we were like, Asians are the model citizen and we usually never really stand or fight against anything, right? So we are easy targets in past terms. And I think now it's kind of waking our community up of like, you know, enough is enough, and not accepting it anymore. Because it's gotten, because of the internet, because of the videos being shared and going viral, it's so upsetting. I've only been able to watch like half of stuff, like a video. Yeah, it's so tough, stuff, man. Yeah. But it is one of those things. Just to tie it back to biases, it is alarming to see people kind of having that effect of waiting for someone else to help, right? You see a lot of these videos about like bystanders just continue bystanding, right? They don't really jump in. And a lot of that is the media. A lot of it is like shock seeing it happening in real life after being exposed to it to TV and games all the time, right? It's still very alarming to see, wow, is this how I would react if I see something happening? Right. I think a lot of people would at first say confidently that no, I would help, but it's hard to kind of imagine you reacting any differently, seeing these reactions.
Yeah, most people
won't help. Yeah.
And especially like in some situations, like you helping could just end up getting yourself like killed.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? And so like, you don't know what to expect. Right. Yeah. And like, what are you really going to do? Like, you're going to make a citizen's arrest and sit on the person until the cops show up. Like, nah, man. Like really.
There's certain areas to hit to disable the person. All right, I can show you later.
We'll talk about that later. But ideally, like, you know, I ain't trying to be fighting no dude with a knife or a gun or whatever, right? If he had one, right?
Oh, am I going to find you? What are you saying, Ray? Am I going to find you in a video just standing there when my people are being beat up? Is that what you're saying to me?
You probably would see that, yeah. Like, I can't say that. Like, maybe I would react differently in the moment and assess if I should do something, right? But, like, I can't sit here and say with a straight face that I would be like, oh, yeah, man, I would jump in there and, like, boxing this dude up. Like, no, man, like I can't say that would be me.
Grab something and throw it at him. Yeah. You know, you're pretty safe. How's your throwing arm, dude?
It's been a while since I've been in a fight, like a long, long while. So,
your last promotion. Well, like, this is kind of say to that, like, there is like a mob mentality thing. Like, when people are individualized, asked to do something, they rarely do it until a group movement happens. So, this kind of tied back to what we're saying with the diversity push. It really does take a whole group, like a whole company, to be behind an idea for real changes to happen. And I think what you're saying is the reason why the push have been slow is just, it sounds good as PR, but there isn't like a lot of follow up to make it so. And
you also have to address the entire thing, right? You have
problem,
to address the entire pipeline. job descriptions, how you're hiring, how you're recruiting. What does the interview panel look like? And then when people are hired, what are you doing to make sure that they stay?
You're right.
To make them feel supported and
it's pretty deep.
That I have a hostile working environment and have flexible policies for people with families. And like, I mean, it goes on and on, right? So you have to make sure you do all those right things. What are you doing for apprenticeships? What are you doing for mentorships? What are you doing for your community?
Yeah. Right? Like, it's a lot, man. Address. Like, I'm starting to hear the business owner guy saying, like, wait, why am I going through all this? Can I just find someone quick? All the list. You're deterring. I was on your side, and now you're deterring me from but it's true. Like, if I do feel, I usually am comfortable with people in interviews, right? If I were interviewing for a job, but I am instantly comfortable when I see like an Asian across in a similar position and he's interviewing me, and it's just like, oh, all right, cool. Now we're good, right? I do have that feeling, and it is like that to make someone feel welcome at the very beginning. It's super intimidating. Can I walk in a room being basically judged the whole time, right? And just seeing no one looking like you. Like, I do feel you probably have that position more than I have in my career, right?
Well, not more than like, that's every situation.
Every situation has been like
that. Every, right? And so, like, at that point, when it's every situation, you know you're going into it like that. Like, you know, like, I don't even expect that.
Yeah, it's
right? And so then if you do see it, you're like, oh, that's a surprise.
Unicorn,
yeah. Right? But you're going in there completely not expecting that, right? You're about, okay, let's get this job.
Because yeah.
I just need to get a job and make a cool game, right?
Yeah.
You're not even thinking about, well, if there's nobody else here like me, then like I'm gonna be unhappy. Nah, like that's been my entire career, like for the most part, right?
So that's why I feel for women, especially because most of the places I work, man, not a lot of women. And it's super intimidating. There is like male ego energy. Right, it's like a frat party pretty much in a lot of these companies, right?
There's video game ego. That's really more what it is, like just dudes in the industry.
Yeah, so it must be odd to walk in a room full of dudes, right, and just be judged.
Although like when I worked at Ubi, there was a lot of really strong, powerful women working at Ubisoft, and which is kind of really interesting given all of the latest drama surrounding Ubisoft, right? But like there's a lot of like really, you know, solid women engineers and like tech directors.
But it started from the top up because of Jade being like the executive, right? So that probably played an influence.
Yeah, but even before Jade became executive, there was a lot of women.
Okay. So it's always been a thing then.
Yeah.
Is it a more Canadian thing then, or then is it United States ish or what? What we?
No idea. But still, at Ubisoft though, past a certain level, it was still only dudes.
Of course,
right? Yeah. But this seemed like there was more. It was definitely the company I worked at with the most women for sure.
Well, I will say when you know I used to kind of visit you guys at Unity every week at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. Unity has super diverse crowd, it feels like, more so than other game companies. I mean, you guys are engine company, but like a lot more than I am used to. Well,
yeah, I'll point out, yeah, Unity is a tech company, right?
Yeah.
And so like at tech companies, there's people in other departments and doing other things. There's a lot of people that have nothing to do with games, or they're doing marketing, doing sales, engineering support, right? Like, so it's way more mixed. It's kind of, the demographics are more representative of like a tech company, right?
I see.
And then when you look at those numbers, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of women, right? But it still ain't no 50%.
Yeah, it ain't. Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
And I will say the same
and of course it's more women than like Joe Blow video game company, right?
Yeah. I will say the same about, because I was a Pakistan's while I was up there, right? And it was again not a regular game company, it was a mobile company with its own separate thing, and it was super diverse. The most diverse company I ever worked at, to be honest, where it was like it felt like every maybe not every fourth table, but every fifth table or something was a woman, or just diverse.
Yeah. But also I will point out, and this is one of my pet peeves, is just because you have a smattering of women does not make your company diverse.
Oh, right. Right.
It's, you know, you have to address all of the
colors,
all of the different aspects. I'll say the aspects of that. Right. And there's also multiple intersections and cross sections. Right.
Yeah.
Of all the women, you have people like, hey, man, there's a lot of women at this company. Right. How many of them are Black women? Right. And your answer changes drastically. Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so then it's like, oh, like, are we really diverse then?
So white women? Right? Well, I would say this, right?
Yeah.
It's not crazy. But a lot of it, again, tracing back to when I went back to school, the ratio was around the same as in going to these workplaces, right? So some might argue, I think we know the answer. The exposure in certain groups haven't been there for game development, because I barely knew it was a thing when I was going through school as being a career path, right? So these communities are starting to broaden up, like what you're doing at Game Heads and stuff, to kind of broaden the possibility of being a game developer. And then naturally in these classrooms are getting filled up, and then naturally studios are going to get filled up, right? So is it one of those things where women are not quite there that is representing 50% in the classroom? Because, you know, these schools take anybody, right? There's no biases there. They'll just, yeah, money, I'll take you, right? So I think one of those things, like, have there been a study in these classrooms versus studio? Is it reflective of that? Because I don't think most schools are 50% women just yet, right? Or diverse in that way.
Yeah, I had this discussion with somebody else, like a friend of mine, and like, I don't know the exact numbers for women, but I know for, like, say, Black computer science graduates, the percentage that graduate versus the percentage that end up with in the tech
industry, in the jobs, yeah,
like in the tech industry jobs, it drops, right?
So by how much? Like a huge drastic drop, yeah.
It drops enough where, like, the tech industry
noticeable
3%, right? Oh, yeah. And the number of the percentage graduates is higher, right? At least that's
right. See, that those studies I wish would be more discussed and available, because that is a clear indication of
what's going on. Now that percentage is still pretty low, right? It's not like 100% representative of the population at large.
Yeah.
But there is a drop right now. Is the drop not prepared for the job? Like, don't have the right, didn't get the right. Like the school failed you.
Right.
Or bias in the interview process.
Right.
Or you just decided to do something else. Right. Like, there's factors that can go into that.
Right.
But there is a drop.
Right. I would then say, being the artist telling the programmer, I would say just compare that percentage drop to the counterpart, right? The white student.
Right. Right.
Is it the same? Right. And then if it's the same, then that's standard.
Yeah. But it's probably not. But then also there's at least in the US, right, there's also a disparity between access to education.
Right.
So even if you did have education, then there's disparity between quality of education.
Right.
And so, like, all these things you gotta play into.
But I think that, yeah, I mean, I wish maybe at some point we'll add on to the discussion. But that part of the study is so important, where I don't hear too much about that, even in these tech industry and Marvel and all this stuff. I wish they would just talk about that more, because I think that's it's more quantitative to what's going on than speculative, right? Because a lot of it, we're hearing, like, the last part of the conversation, maybe the study was there, but we're hearing the last part of the conversation, and it's hard to convince people of that without showing, like, hey, it's very simple. Look at these Asian actors graduating from this acting school and look at how they're not being placed in these acting jobs, right? Or in our case, you know, game developers, students who are wanting to be game developers and just seeing the percentage. Like, that is a great entry point to this discussion. Nobody, I wish
nobody I would be wants more nobody yeah. wants to
see the truth
that they have bias, right? They much rather say, oh, there's just not enough. There's just not enough people.
Right.
There's not,
it's enough, just easier.
There's just not enough candidates. And so we have to fix that problem. Right. But nobody really wants to say, oh, maybe there are some biases and trapdoors in the process that also kind of whittles out people. Right. Maybe it's our company culture or like, and so then when diverse folks look at us, they're like, nah, I'm good. And then they go somewhere else or totally don't want any parts of the industry at all because they look and they're like, nah, there's that does not represent me.
It doesn't fit. Yeah.
You know, like I don't fit into there. It's not my vibe. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of things like that, that, you know, you have to also consider.
Right? Well, that is true, man. I think, have you seen, I guess my last question, have you seen things at a workplace that you're like, no thanks?
Like, all right. I am a nerd. Like, let's just be real. Like, I think we could clearly say that I am a nerd, right?
Of course. You're not fooling anyone.
No, I went to the University of Waterloo, which is a mathematics and engineering school. That's what it's known for.
Geek.
Engineering. And so there's a lot of nerds that go to that school, right? Yeah. Like a lot.
Yeah.
And like, I still remember them playing like Magic the Gathering in one of the rooms. And I was just like, nope, this is just too nerdy. Like, this is too nerdy. Right. And
I thought you were going to say the opposite. Oh, wow. All right.
No. Right. Like, so like there were definitely times where I was like, yeah, this is not my vibe, you know.
But you love those turn-based nerdy other digital games,
turn-based nerdy stuff, and probably I would get into Magic if I had the right group of people to introduce me into it. That
if you saw the same color,
yeah, that weren't so dialed up to like 100.
There is a certain. All right, I'm starting to see what you mean now. Yeah, yeah.
If you're not comfortable in the environment, right? Like some things just immediately make you go, I don't know.
There are definitely things where culturally, if I were to get into something, like I would look back on my culture of friends who are not into the same thing. I was like, would I be rejected from my group if I start playing Magic again? I feel like with the Black community, you guys have to really be intentive.
And there's Black nerds and there's nerds that play Magic. There's Black nerds that play Magic.
And I'm sure you have feelings about them. They play D&D. Yeah, I know. Like, they love anime. Right? Yes,
and,
yes.
And I mean, and I think if I had that group of people around me earlier on,
you would pick it up.
I would have picked it up more, right? But like, it was just asking too much of me, right? To get into it with that group that
it's
I.
It's very at. True what you're saying. Yeah, it's like it almost feels like a chicken in the egg thing where something needs to happen, but where there needs to be a group ready to kind of make it grow. But right now, it's like.
Yeah.
Getting to that step is so difficult.
It goes back to what you said, right? That's why I do the game ed stuff, right? It's because so the kids see, there's people like me in this industry.
Right.
And so I have a chance at it too, right? It is welcoming to me. It is something that I can actually pursue. Let me try, right?
Nice. Yeah, that's true.
At least that's part of like why I do the game head stuff for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely important for sure. Yeah, I see it. But man, I want to thank you. We're hitting at the top of the hour. It's a major issue. It seems to change every couple of years in terms of like different perspective, right? It's the same thing, right? There's not enough people of different colors and sorts in a workplace. But I feel like because of latest events and stuff, it's always kind of great to kind of revisit of what that influence is. We're talking about how COVID and forced remote working is kind of changing a little things. And then the increase of what you're seeing at Game Heads and just the availability of game education is kind of making a push. You did kind of surprise me where I did think that I thought online would remove barriers, but you're saying it actually puts more up because of the less physical presence. Are you seeing that too? Like, I know you super last question. I know you're doing a lot of Zoom interviews and naturally you're just kind of more open arms with people, but are you lacking connection? More so than, okay.
I think Zoom interviews are just harder to do, like in general. So it's harder. It's hard to assess people's skills. It's harder to really
be comfortable.
The body language and the subtle things that get lost in the video, get comfortable with somebody. I think it's just harder for sure.
Do you foresee a lot of regrets when people are going back to the office and meeting these people and sitting next to them? Man. It's like, oh, wow. Oh, awesome. BO. I couldn't smell that through Zoom. BO is a real thing, man. Like that sitting next to someone is.
That sounds. Oh, first of all, that sounds like video game industry problem. That's
us. certain people have like non-compromising BO where others are, you know, tolerable. Right. But it is a thing where it is so important. If you are going to sit next to someone, you're basically sitting next to someone for the remainder of your time there. And that's the person that you are forced to be friends with in a way. And I guess naturally that kind of lends to the conversation of why people prefer to hire their friends or people like them, because they want to be tolerable. They want to just go to work and be okay and comfortable and not have to be so careful.
It's also super easy, right? Because you worked with the person. You don't have to assess their skills.
Exactly.
You know what they could do. Just hire them because you know what they could do.
I'm the exact same way. I hate meeting new people. It's like, oh, you know, I'm getting too old, but I got a fake smile. I got to act interested. You know, we got our shots, right? And I'm learning how to talk to people again. It's like, all right, stare at the eyes, look away, don't stare too long. All right, look back again. Like all these things I'm relearning how to have a conversation, even though we're podcasting forever, right? I just am learning it again because I'm in the presence of people. And reminding myself is like, oh, I think he made a joke. I should laugh to make him feel comfortable. And I'm another prophecy coming here. A lot of regrets are going to be happening when people are finally meeting people for the first time after hiring him and just getting used to the quirks of people again. It's going to be a disaster, dude. I think so. That's a lot of Zoom hires, man. We'll talk at the roundtable about last year and the uptick of hires. It's a lot. Let's say like 20-30% hires. And it's like huge amount of hires over the last year. Suddenly throwing them back in the office is it's going to be interesting. It's going to be something to look toward. Yeah,
office probably don't have space. So
it's true.
Part of the problem.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw Google trying to reconfigure their. They're getting rid of all their open space. Did you hear all that stuff?
I didn't hear that. No. Yeah.
So the big article came out and they're kind of forcing everybody back in. And the biggest problem about that is that they can't obviously have everyone in. They have to space it out. So there's only a certain percentage. So all the dead space, you know, all the fun things that make a tech company fun, they're basically getting rid of all that to make space of more desk and getting rid of the open floor philosophy that's made, you know, Silicon Valley so special. They're like reversing all that now. It's just kind of funny to kind of see how they react to that.
What you say made them so special, but anyway, all right.
Well, open space philosophy was the big thing. Here's the weird thing, right? And I know it's super late and I keep kind of, because you're so fun to talk to. The strategy of going back to work, it's going to feel awkward, basically, I think, now that everyone is getting back in the office. and there's this huge exodus that's happening in the Bay Area, right? Just this general feeling of this is too expensive. My place is too small. And a lot of people, I know you have friends, I have friends, have left and thought they could keep doing remote, and now they're being asked back. So yeah. How much of the fallout, how many people are we losing from that? Forget diversity, just general people. Right?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Like, I don't know if it's going to be a huge amount, but I think there is going to be some percentage of folks that are like, I ain't coming back. Yeah. Right. And and either the company's gonna have to fire them or let them work remote, right? Or they'll just find a company that lets them work remote. And there's plenty of those these days. So so I can imagine there'd be some non-trivial percentage of folks that happen to. One thing about the Bay Area, you say people leaving the Bay Area. I'm also seeing people
moving in.
The numbers are showing not just that, moving to the parts of the Bay Area that are not San Francisco.
Yeah.
So people, the cheaper places. Yeah, people in San Francisco going, like, I'm in my house all day long. Maybe just at least get a house with a yard. You know what I mean, right? And so they go or get a bigger house so that I can work from home in a more spacious environment. And so they're like moving to East Bay, driving up East Bay prices and things like that, right? So we're seeing there's some movement like out of state, but there's also some movement just like inside of the Bay Area too, like into so that people can better work from home.
You know? Right. So my super last question, right?
Yeah.
Now that people are, so there's the cause and effect of this, right? Like people who are left not coming back to California because California was kind of crazy this past year, right? And then permanently remote and not coming back to the office. People who are still here don't want to stay in these mega cities anymore. And preferred to live outside in cheaper areas. It also feels that this, like you said, is going to hurt the diversity push, right? Where the biggest factor is coming into an office and seeing people like you, right? Seems to be disappearing because no one wants to be in the office and in these expensive areas. And so you're going to see less and less of us, yeah. Right?
Well, that's definitely true. Yeah, even in my current job, I'm seeing some folks, and I'm like, oh man, I didn't know you were here.
Because
they work remotely, right? So
yeah
I could totally see that being.
So that's gonna hurt it, right? This push,
like the social connections that can happen when you're in the office. There's gonna be less of those for sure.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna take 5 steps back then. Cool, man. good talk. But yeah, you just made me realize that it's going to be a long road. I don't know what it's going to take to kind of reverse this, but we're not going to figure it out in this pod episode. Before I kind of let you go, why don't you share to the good people out there where they could find you on Twitter and all that if they want to make a connection?
Yeah, on Twitter, it's WADARASS, WADARASS on Twitter. And LinkedIn is just my name, Ray Graham.
All right. As always, you can find the information on the link description below in this episode, as well as, you know, the blog article dedicated to this episode. I want to thank you, Ray. It's always a pleasure to kind of talk to you. I'm glad you're out and about, COVID-free, got your shot. I'll probably be in the Bay Area this summer, bro. So
I dig it.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'll be there. V's getting married, so I gotta be there. But
that's right.
Good night, man. And have a good one. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give GameDev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BLUCHAMPS.
You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/bluechamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.